Imagine taking a massive final exam. You score like 3 million more points than the person sitting right next to you, but they still get the A, and well, you fail.
Right, which sounds completely backwards.
Exactly. But in the American presidential system, this isn't a glitch, it's a feature. So, welcome to the deep dive. Today's mission for you, the listener, is to really unpack this dense constitutional report on the Electoral College versus a nationwide popular vote.
Yeah, we're going to explore its 1787 structural foundations, the arguments for and against the status quo, and of course, potential reforms.
And real quick, because the source material covers some highly charged political debates, we have to note right up front that we are completely impartial here.
Absolutely.
We aren't taking sides or endorsing any of these viewpoints, left or right. We are strictly conveying the fascinating arguments laid out in the text.
Just sticking to the source material.
Right. Okay, let's unpack this. When I read through the original constitutional framework, I couldn't help but compare the Electoral College to like a legacy operating system.
Oh, that's a really good analogy.
Yeah, because some users argue it's full of bugs and desperately needs a modern replacement, while others say its core architecture is the only thing preventing total systemic crashes.
Well, the original system was this finely wrought compromise, but that version 1.0 operating system broke almost immediately.
Wait, really? How early?
I mean, right away in 1800, there was this huge deadlock between Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr, and it required 36 exhausting ballots in the House of Representatives to resolve.
Wow, 36.
Yeah, that crisis forced the 12th Amendment, which was essentially a software patch to handle the new reality of political parties.
Right, so since that patched operating system has largely survived since 1804, we have to examine why defenders believe it's so crucial to maintain today.
Yeah, the text emphasizes it preserves a partly national, partly federal republic. You have the senatorial bonus, which gives small states like Wyoming and Vermont a baseline of relevance.
Because everyone gets those two extra electoral votes, no matter the population.
Exactly. And it forces candidates to build broad geographic coalitions rather than just, exclusively targeting massive cities.
So what does this all mean? It's kind of like a weighted grading scale, right? It prevents one massive test, or like one densely populated region, from dictating the entire semester.
Yeah, and what's fascinating here is how the system applies Duverger's law.
Duverger's Law.
Yeah, it mathematically anchors a stable two-party system. Because almost every state uses winner-take-all rules, voters realize supporting a third party is basically throwing their vote away.
Oh, right.
So proponents argue this stability prevents severe parliamentary-style fragmentation, where tiny extremist factions can hold outsized power over a government.
Okay, that makes sense. It reminds me of the World Series. A baseball team can win 3 games by 10 runs each, but lose 4 games by a single run.
Right.
They scored way more runs overall, but they still lose the series because it's about winning specific geographic games, not just racking up a massive aggregate score.
And that geographic focus acts as a firewall against administrative chaos. In close election, the Electoral College isolates recounts to individual states.
Which is huge.
Definitely.
Yeah.
A recount in Florida or Georgia is a nightmare, but it's manageable. A recount across 3,000 counties nationwide could just trigger a constitutional crisis.
Okay, I get the firewall argument, but wait, so under winner-take-all rules, a Republican in New York or a Democrat in Texas is functionally voteless in the national tally.
Pretty much, yeah. That geographic stability comes at a direct cost to individual voter equality.
Because the wrong winner problem has happened, what, 5 times? Like in 1824, 2000, and 2016.
Right. And this raises an important question when you look at the math. One electoral vote in Alaska represents about 75,000 voters.
Okay.
But in California, one electoral vote represents over 400,000.
Oh, wow, that is a massive inequality. And millions of votes just vanish from the final math.
Exactly, which leads to intense geographic neglect. In 2004, 94% of campaign resources went to just 12 swing states.
Just 12 states.
Yeah, and the source data shows this actually warps governance,
Yeah.
leading to disproportionate federal grants and even disaster declarations for those specific battlegrounds.
Well, the rest of the country is largely ignored. Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Because of these striking inequalities, reformers are actively trying to change the rules. But an Article V amendment is nearly impossible today, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, a 1969 attempt passed the House easily, but then it just died in a Senate filibuster.
So now, 17 states and DC are attempting the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, or the NPVIC. They hold 209 of the 270 electoral votes needed.
Right.
So is this basically a clever legal hack around the Constitution using state plenary power?
That is the mechanism, yeah. Because states control how their votes are awarded, they agree to just give them all to the national popular vote winner. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, it faces massive constitutional hurdles.
Like what kind of hurdles?
Well, the Compact Clause. Opponents will argue states cannot make agreements that undermine the federal structure without congressional approval.
Gotcha.
Plus, there are severe equal protection challenges. Because voting laws, like ID requirements or felon voting rights, vary wildly from state to state.
Right, so an aggregated national popular vote isn't actually a level playing field.
Exactly.
Well, whether you favor a federal republic of sovereign states or a unified majoritarian democracy, understanding these mechanics is vital for your grasp of American elections.
Absolutely. And we want to leave you with a final puzzle to explore on your own.
Yeah, think about this.
If America did switch to a popular vote and a third party surged, how effectively could a new president govern if they won the highest vote count? But that total was only 35% of the country.
Yeah. Does that legacy operating system need a total wipe or just another patch? Something for you to ponder until next time.